Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello there, I'm Umar Park and I'm PK Park, and sitting in for Cam Ruslan, who is away in the UK doing some literary tour or something. I've got with me today two special guests. My co-host on the evening edition joins me, Ezra Zayed.
Hello, hello.
We've got Bernice Chorley, author, poet, festival director, all-round Renaissance woman. Bernice, welcome
hello.
Back to the show. This is the Dream Team. It's great to have you all.
Is it? I hear the Dream Team being announced every weekend, so I'm not quite sure how
pretty much. We like to make everyone feel good on a bit of culture. Our topics for today are: topic number one, Rehman Rashid. Topic number two, we're going to be talking about "for mature audiences only." That phrase, what does it mean? And topic number three, Raya ads or festive ads. So to kick things off, we'll start with my topic, which is about Rehman Rashid, Malaysian author, Malaysian journalist. He passed away just over a month ago.
Yeah.
And it was a great loss to all of us, because all three of us in this room knew him very well. We were friends, we were colleagues. For me, he was my boss at one time, was my mentor, kind of taught me everything I knew. Yeah. And yeah, it was a tough one for me, which is why I think it's taken me this long to talk about it.
Right. So I just want to interrupt simply because I would comfortably say that I had like a very professional relationship with him.
Correct. You were looking to translate his book.
Because as a young publisher, right, you're looking for, you know, these big writers. And there was no writer bigger than Rehman Rashid. So I did the typical thing. I would ask my mom and dad whether they knew Rehman Rashid. I would ask my grandparents whether they knew Rehman Rashid. And Rehman was actually a good friend of the family. So I went through in the family route. And so I kind of protected myself from the zingers that he would throw my way as we began our professional relationship. And in the short time, very, very brief time that I knew him, you felt like you were in the presence of somebody who knew what he was doing, not just in that moment, but for a longer, broader scope of time. And so I always felt like, you better write this down, Ezra. You're learning something. You better write this down somewhere. He's giving you nuggets.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure if I'm capable and competent enough to take those nuggets and make it into gold. And that was always how I felt with
him. That was how I felt constantly with him, right? But instead of what I wanted to do was I wanted for all of us to kind of share our earlier stories with Rehman, because everyone has a Rehman Rashid story, and it's not necessarily a good one either.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I loved the man and I loved him a lot, but he was a hard man to deal with.
Yes, he was.
And so I would
huge ego.
Oh, huge.
Huge,
right? But it was all part of his personality,
of course,
and charm.
Yeah.
And I wanted you guys to share either your first encounters or a memorable encounter with Rehman Rashid, because I'm sure you have one. Ezra, every time you speak about your encounters with Rehman Rashid, there's always this sense of intimidation.
It was intimidation because, you know, I know him only as the author of A Malaysian Journey. And then when I found out that he was your boss, every time I would have an interaction with Rehman, I'd run it by you to think, do you think that went well? Do you think he would like me a little bit more?
Yeah. Does he like me?
Does he like? I mean, there was that sentiment.
Goodness.
Because he was really somebody who, you know, would always give some sort of commentary on whether or on the particular issue or discussion at hand. So one of my earliest memories was we were trying to figure out how could we work on a translation or a Malay translation of A Malaysian Journey. These were just discussions that I would have with him. And, you know, obviously translation is very, very difficult work, especially with somebody who has the vocabulary of Rehman Rashid.
Absolutely.
How do you translate that faithfully?
Into BM.
Into BM.
And the conversation I remember, he goes, you know, Ezra, it's been 20 years. I don't really care anymore. I trust you. You're the next generation.
Right.
I leave it in your good hands. And now when I'm hearing this, I'm going, well, A, that's exactly what I want to hear, but B, that's exactly not what I want to hear, because you want Rehman
Rashid.
So
much expectation.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And look at that. I mean, just that willingness to say to the next generation of content creators, saying, hey, this is not my thing anymore. Yeah. This is your thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a huge, very, very big of him. And we never got around to it just because of all sorts of problems that we encounter along the way, but we would also have, you know, these exchanges about how he and my mom were childhood friends.
Oh, really?
And, you know, he would send me photos of birthday parties that, you know, my mom, age 4 and 3, and he's there next to me. So he's been this very present and omnipresent figure in my family, in my life, without exactly realizing it. And, you know, his passing was unfortunate. It's bittersweet, but I was also so, so happy that he managed to get his books out in his later years. And that gave me great satisfaction from afar. Just not even being professionally involved with it. Just seeing that, oh, I'm so happy he got his work out.
2016 was a great year for Rehman. He released two books that were on the bestseller list for a long time. And they were both really, really good books. Bernice, what was your Rehman encounter? You must have so many.
Oh, it was in 1992. I was sitting in the house in KKB in Magic River with Antares and Mary and all these people.
The Kuala Kubu Baru crowd.
Yes, the KKB crowd. And it was one weekend morning, and I just looked at Antares and said, "We're going to have a very special visitor today." Sure enough, a few hours later, this very tall man strode in with a backpack with khakis and a Bermuda hat, sunglasses, and big booming voice, and there he was, Rehman Rashid. It was my first meeting of him, and he called me Bernie, and then he was telling...
Does anyone else call you Bernie?
No one else is allowed to call me Bernie. And then he started talking about this book that he'd been working on. He was just in Bermuda. Over the years, I've had many conversations with Rehman. I know his other brothers, I know his mother, and I found him to be, you know, in spite of his largesse, and he's an imposing figure. Yes, but he was always very kind to me and very generous, and he would hug me and chium me. I mean, no one else chiums, you know, like it's a real Malikana.
Right. I know what you're talking about.
Yes,
I've seen him sort of meet my grandmother and give this very sort of neighborhood kind of intimacy that you don't see so normally.
I woke up, you know, to his death, and I just cried the whole day. I was a mess. I was a real mess. We've lost a great figure in our letters, you know, literature, and he will not be forgotten.
Yeah.
Umar, for folks who don't know him, it's hard to summarize his career, right?
Oh, because his career was so varied. I mean, he qualified as a marine biologist.
Absolutely.
And he worked as a marine biologist.
Right.
For a while.
Yeah. Up in Kedah and Langkawi, right? Mm-hmm. And then he kind of fell into journalism under the late Saman Ismail at NST. And of course, he was his primary mentor, and he learned everything he knew. And then there was a brief period of falling out with Mahathir. And he went into exile, self-imposed exile, where he, you know, he was a brilliant journalist in Hong Kong. He won awards. And then finally, he kind of returned. The prodigal son returns to Malaysia and writes this brilliant book called A Malaysian Journey, which all of you should read, because over 2.5 decades later, it is still probably one of the most prescient works about our condition, because sadly, it hasn't changed.
Yeah.
His last chapter of the book is really quite something, in that it is hopeful for the future, and it's the same conversations we have when we meet young people today, going, "Oh, they are the future. They will bring us hope and change." Right? Mm. And he had this 25 years ago, this multiracial, unified vision of Malaysia, and then after he retired, Rehman kind of, you know, yet again exiled himself in KKB. I say exile, but it's just he really loved that city and he loved the small town life. And he went there and he wrote two more books, Small Town and Peninsula, which are also available. And they were kind of his post-later years meditations on how Malaysia has changed or not, and his life in it, you know, because these books are not necessarily about Malaysia, but also his part in Malaysia, if you will, because he's always a player, as we all are.
And what's so interesting about these exiles that sort of he undertook, you kind of sense that in his writing as well, because he's super close to the action, but he writes it with a distance, which is very, very difficult for anybody to accomplish, and he managed to do that.
I think he really needed his solitude.
He did.
He really did. And he was, you know, he was, I remember sort of gleefully laughing, saying, "Oh, I've retired. I will live off my pension. Do you have a pension, Bernie? Make sure you have a pension." Ha ha ha. And then, you know, and I kept bugging him about his next book, and I guess he was writing it all
he
along.
He was.
You know,
we've got to go on to topic number two, but I'll tell you about my last encounter with Rehman, or my last significant encounter with Rehman. Last year in October, I took a month off for my sabbatical to go and write. And it was primarily inspired by him, because he had this moment where he kind of sat me down and he just goes on this, yet again, "You are the next generation" rant. Yeah. And he had this whole rant about how I am wasting my life by not writing. And so he's like, you have to go and write. And I think that's my greatest sadness, because when I finish writing this, he's not going to be around to read it, right? Because he's usually my first point
of reference.
I'll send anything to him and go, can you read this, please?
Wow. And when you send it, it's excitement and fear. Yes,
oh, it's so much fear.
Yeah.
Because he will tear you apart.
Yeah.
In a good way.
He tore me apart on a title and a subtitle once. That's Raymond for you. You know, he's part of the project. But Ezra, just two notes. That's not how you use that particular phrase. And I would do this. But you know what? It's your call.
But he was right.
And he's always right.
So, Raymond Rashid, wherever you are, rest well, sir. Which brings us to topic number two. And we're going to talk about books again. This time, Bernice, it's your second book.
No, it's my debut novel. It's my sixth book.
No. But your second fiction, big novel, right? You've had poetry collections.
But it's my first novel.
Really? You don't consider Growing Up with Ghosts semi-novelesque? I mean, it was autobiographical, but you had fictional elements in it.
But I mean, this is like the first kind of real...
Yeah, it's a straight-up proper piece of fiction, right?
Yes.
But we're not talking about the book itself. I mean, for that, I'll get you on bookmark. But we're actually talking about the cover of your book.
Which is very beautiful.
And a little addendum.
How do we describe this for the audio format?
It's the cover is inspired by the Penguin Ink series, which came out recently. So it sort of looks like a tattoo.
Yes, it does.
You have the head of a girl and then surrounded by the flame of the forest.
There's a snake there.
Yes, there's a snake there.
Yeah, some hibiscus as well.
No, it's the flame of the forest.
Okay.
And 2 days ago, my publisher told me that they decided to add this little disclaimer.
On the bottom right?
Which says, for mature readers only. So.
It's like the explicit content sticker on rap CDs.
Yeah, we've got it. As Al Gore and Tippy Gore,
They're the ones who came up with that. Yeah.
So the reason, and I got this out of my publicist yesterday. Yes, I do have a publicist. Was that it came from the distributor because the bookshops are really cautious right now.
Right.
So this is about the bookshops because of what happened with you and your incident at Borders. So
what,
you know
what?
Yes, the bookshops are really, really cautious about taking on books that are potentially, you know,
controversial.
How do they assess or evaluate the potential of how much it's going to sort of blow up, so to speak?
Well, I've read your book and it has some political content.
Right.
And that's possibly the reason why, Bernice?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, there's a lot of... I definitely don't want my book to be read by a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of violence in it. You know, it's political, yes, but there's also a lot of elements which some people might find offensive or slighted. You know, but at the same time, it's a book about a very important time in our period. It was about the Reformasi period. Yes, of course, it starts with Anwar, it ends with Anwar. So the book is bookended by the arrest of Anwar Ibrahim and his release from prison in 2004. So my characters live
within
that frame. So it's sort of, you have the political backdrop of Malaysian history, but you also have characters who live and survive during this time. And it's also about a city that I love very much. It's about KL.
I mean, you're reinforcing the fact. I mean, it's not about politics. The politics is in the background of
absolutely,
the book.
Absolutely,
but
absolutely.
But even that is deemed to be somewhat controversial.
Yeah, I mean, Kinokuniya is not going to have me.
As a launch.
They will sell the book, but they won't have me there reading from it.
Now, so...
You know, which is...
When this decision came to have this sort of tiny disclaimer on the cover of the book, like who approached you and how was it explained to you?
Well, they just did it. They went ahead and did it, and then they told me... It came from the distributor because, like I said, the bookshops are really worried. Yeah. So they are worried.
Yeah, Bernice told me this just yesterday. And it got me thinking as to what a mature audience is.
Reader is. I mean,
it's not just an age. You said you don't want kids reading it. But, you know, it's not like, okay, you're 18, so now you can read this book. But, you know, there's going to be... If someone reads it and takes offense and makes a police report, can your defense be, well, sir, you're clearly not a mature reader.
Right.
And this book is not meant for you. It says so on the cover.
Yes, right. That's right. I mean, it can work on so many levels. Do you know what I mean? Which I think...
You want it to work in court. Let me tell you that.
There we go. So, but yeah, this thing. What is a mature audience? Mature equals not just necessarily age, but open-mindedness. To be able to read, not just read literally into some of the elements that are going to be in the book, but to be able to accept it. Yes, this is part of human nature. We are writing about, you know, the book is about real people.
I think what's also you know, frustrating about this circumstance is that distributors and bookshops now are in some ways complicit with the content of what is being written by a variety of writers, because Bernice Charlie is going to be on one rack, but is the distributor also responsible for the writings of Richard Dawkins and, right. and Stephen Hawking mm-hmm. and Arundhati Roy? You mm-hmm. know,
I guess because I'm a Malaysian writer.
Right.
I think there's a big difference. There's a lot of the Scandi noir and all of that. I mean, there's so much violence in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Bernice, you go to Kinokuniya, for example, yes, right? It's a big bookshop.
Yeah.
There's about maybe 15 to 20 meters of shelves, mm-hmm. which are labeled thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And in those shelves, there is rape, violence, sex, mm-hmm. horror, all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. I have never seen a sticker.
I know.
You know,
I know
when I see stickers?
But not Malaysian writer. That's the problem.
But for foreign writers, you know when I see stickers?
Yes.
On anime and mangas.
Right.
That will be wrapped and it says for mature audiences only,
because it's very
sexually
explicit.
There may be a little boobies.
Yes,
right.
Boobies.
Well,
that's it.
I can tell you that when one of my books got unbanned by the courts, when mm-hmm. it was initially banned by the Home Ministry.
The Sisters in Islam book?
It was the Ishat Manji book. Mm. Once it was unbanned by the ministry, we had all of these copies and I said to distributors, hey, you know, it's unbanned now. And
right.
of course, we understand that the book is unbanned, but we're still uncomfortable mm-hmm. With distributors. This book, and so what can we do? I said, well, you know what? I can put a sticker on it
right.
that it says, you know, bache tampu waswas.
Right.
And they said, yeah, okay, that makes us feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we printed all these stickers, start putting on these books, the distributor and the bookstore start taking it on because, you know, I had to show them all this documentation that the book has been unbanned. And mm-hmm. it's a very, very weird environment to operate in.
Absolutely.
And,
I mean,
and I think
it's
very, very, it's very unfair to all of these silent partners in the book publishing process.
Yeah.
But you know what? Overseas, a rating system, for example, for film, for music, it actually affords some sort of protection. You know, if someone takes a kid to watch an R-rated film mm-hmm. and then complains afterwards, people will turn around and go, well, you broke the law. You're not supposed to take your kid to watch it.
Yeah.
Or if someone buys someone a Dr. Dre CD and there's a lot of cursing in it, and they go, oh, my kid is totally ruined because of the CD, they can turn around and say, well, you know, your kid shouldn't be listening to that, right?
Yeah.
Over here, it doesn't afford us that same level of protection. Even though you have a Tanpa Waswas, the system is so clankabot, it's so gaseous that no one cares.
It's just we have become so easily offended. This is the problem. It affects so many layers of what we see of culture. And it's almost like we are now blinkered. And it's a terrible place to be in.
Yeah.
You know, it's
kind of
very sad.
It's a very literal place that we're
in.
I honestly don't know how it's going to play out.
I don't know either.
Well, we'll find out when your book comes out and hits the shelves, Lebanese.
So when your book comes out, you don't suspect... I mean, are your publishers concerned about this recent development?
Well, I think... I'm very happy to say that I have a publisher with balls.
That's always important. Always important.
Yes.
Singaporean publisher, though.
I trust him very much. And, you know, he's a very brave man. And, you know, I needed to find a publisher who is going to be as brave as I am. I need to stand by my book. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
All the best, Bernice. And you know what? We'll be covering it on Bookmark for sure.
Awesome.
We're going to take a quick break now. But after that, we're going to be talking about Ezra's opinion and preoccupation with festive ads. All of that coming your way on A Bit of Culture. Don't go anywhere. This is BFM 89.9.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during red, white, and blue savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
And we're back. I'm Uma Pagan, Afrika Pagan, sitting in for Cam Ruslan. Joining me today, Bernice Chorley, Ezra Zayed, a dream team on A Bit of Culture. I'll keep saying it.
You think like we're the USA basketball team of 1992 or
something. Pretty much Magic Johnson, right? We're coming on to topic number 3, which is very fitting given that tomorrow is Raya. You would have been inundated with festive ads, because that seems to be what all corporates want to do these days.
Yeah, well, so a lot of it has been, you know, Raya every year as I'm getting older has got me thinking about, you know, what's a great Raya experience? What's a great Raya celebration?
And this is Ezra craving his kampong la.
And sadly, what it is, it's actually nostalgia.
Of course.
It's cousins, it's kampong, and it's illegal fireworks. That's what it is. But what's really interesting over the past, I don't know, somebody correct me, maybe 5 years, 10 years, certainly since Yasmin Ahmad made emotive commercials for corporations about festive holidays, I think from that marker on, we've seen only that as the benchmark of what it means to represent Malaysia in these very, very festive and communal times. And what's also interesting is that I think everybody looks forward to it, whether the Hari Raya ads, whether the Chinese New Year ads, the agencies look forward to it, the clients look forward to it for a bit of cultural capital. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure if I'm seeing these ads and I actually see much of what I identify as the celebration anymore, because they all kind of do the same thing. There's a functional feel-good target to hit.
Right.
And I don't know whether...
Oh, well, there's a template, right?
There's a template to
there's
it.
There's a message, a moral of the story.
And there's also a moral of the story as well, which, you know, sometimes I don't know whether... You know, these celebrations are important, but I think we might be hitting a mark where maybe like, we don't need to do this anymore.
Peak Raya ad.
Yes. I think there's what you used to call superhero fatigue. I think we've definitely had sort of, you know, Hari Raya ad fatigue, Chinese New Year, Deepavali ad fatigue. We're missing the point now almost.
No, but the reason we have fatigue, and it probably goes back to same reason why we have, say, franchise fatigue with superhero films or monster films or whatever, is because they all feel the same, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, even if you look at Yasmin's brief run, they were all so different and they were all funny. Like, you know, remember the Deepavali ad with the party?
Right.
You know, I want to go party, and then the party, the world party comes along. I mean, that is a play on words. It's a very funny inside Tamil joke.
Yeah.
You know, so there's all of this stuff and she was creative with it. Meanwhile, almost every New Year ad, Deepavali ad, whatever, it's like, oh yeah, okay, I'm a rubber tapper. I'm rude to my mother. I've forgotten my past. Right. Now I'm like, ah, see, serves you right. You must not forget your past.
And so what's so interesting is the...
I don't know why I went all Indian.
Yes. It happens once you share your thoughts about Deepavali. But we saw that recent kerfuffle with the Watsons ad. Now, so what's so fascinating? Here is a pharmacy company who wants to, again, throw themselves into this cultural space where, you know, the number of views and likes and shares will excite more people to go to their pharmacy and buy more products. I mean, I get the premise of it, but now I think everybody's just so desperate to
find a story, because it's like, you know, it's like all these ads tap into sort of the great Malaysian story.
Right.
And there are various strains of it. And Yasmin, brilliant. You know, she was a brilliant storyteller, but she was also a very clever manipulator. It was propaganda.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he's like... So now we've almost exhausted all these stories. We have to go back into our myths. And that's what Watson's was trying to do.
Right.
We've exhausted all these ways of telling stories. You know, the balik kampung story, the single mom story. It's done. So now we go back to our history, our culture, our myth and legend. But it just came out so wrong.
Right. They didn't manage to capture the spirit of these stories and translate it into contemporary times. And I think that's also what's so... cringeworthy.
That's because it's difficult to do well.
That's right. You know? And these companies and agencies and directors and writers, they think, oh, what, it's 2017, it's 20, we're just going to whip something up from the past and it's going to go viral. It's just not that easy. And and when it's done wrong, you take out full page ads.
Absolutely.
With a hashtag saying Maafkan Watson.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know if that's good publicity necessarily.
Yeah, I was speaking about this with Cam a couple of weeks ago on A Bit of Culture, and I said I don't think I agree with this notion of no, there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think in this day and age there is bad publicity just because people pick up pitchforks on Facebook and
Absolutely.
Twitter, right?
Yeah.
But I go back to this idea of what you were saying earlier, Ezra, about telling this Malaysian story and this template, right? Mm. Because even that template now is hindered by what's politically, not correct, but acceptable.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I remember a Deepavali ad from a couple of years ago, and I can't remember if it was a Petronas ad or someone similar, because, you know, they all use the same filters, right? So it all feels the same. The music is the same. The color coding is the same. Yeah. But this one was about this nurse was working at an old folks home, and then these three uncles, I don't know if you remember this, they had nowhere to go, so yeah. she takes them on a road trip and then back to a house for Deepavali or whatever.
Okay.
What was very interesting about this ad was among these three uncles, there wasn't a person that clearly looked or identified as a Malay person because on her road trip, she takes them to Batu Caves. And so as soon as I saw that ad, I was like, oh, that makes sense, because, you know, you can't show a Malay person going into a temple. And that was probably the logic that went through their mind when they were plotting that out.
Right.
And so all of these little things, when in actuality, I've had Malay friends who've come to temple.
Of course, right?
And it's no big deal, but somehow portraying it on screen to a mass audience,
And here's the thing. So when companies and organizations and or agencies, they're considered brave and they should be applauded for wanting to portray the Malaysia as it is. But they face so much scrutiny and difficulty that when they actually do something innovative and captivating, they don't get the backing necessarily that they might need to sort of pull off the true telling of Malaysian thing. But it's such a complicated process right now where I don't know who wins in this scenario. Does the viewer win? Do the creative agencies win? Do the brands win? And it feels just like I don't want to see another riot ad that's just going to give me some feeling of heartache and sadness and melancholy. I don't know if I'm done with that.
Okay, wait. So we've got to wrap this up. But before we go, I got to ask you something, Ezra. You know, you were saying that it was rooted in nostalgia and family and memories and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So when a riot ad, for example, I think Maxis had one a few years ago where they kind of depicted a traditional balik kampung without electronics kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the tone that suits your nostalgia? This idea of running around and chasing chickens and, you know, because that's what they keep pushing, right?
So here's the other frustrating element about the riot as well. The whole visual of the balik kampung to the wooden house and the cars pulling up.
That's right.
If you go back to some of these cities and states in different, those houses, they're hard to come by now.
Yeah.
It's really hard to look for that family that has that vibe, that has that the economic standing.
Right, good producer, Latu. Cari rumah.
Yeah.
The kampung house.
The kampung house, the kampung vibe, that community. Yes. Like, I'm still even in reality trying to look for those things because, you know, my aunts live in a semi-dina in Kota Baru. You know, they don't live in the... So how do we translate and move on with the times as well without sort of dialing up the nostalgia and going to yesteryear to the point where it's not even recognizable anymore?
Wow. You know what I'm going to do? I am going to shock Cam Razlan by engaging with people on the interwebs and saying, do you or have you had enough of festive ads? Tweet us at BFM Radio and let us know what you think. That's right, Cam, if you're listening, we're using Twitter. It's that time of the show now where we recommend something that's making us happy this week. We're going to start with our guest of honor, Bernice Jolly. What is your recommendation? What is making you happy?
Well, I just finished the latest season of Orange is the New Black.
Cepat ni, Bernice.
Yeah, I'm, you know, being
it, like, just launched.
13 episodes. it's really good. I think it's one of the most interesting, diverse television shows on at the moment. It's, you know, women in all their glories. It's funny, it's sad, it's poignant, it's real, you know. And I think that the last episode, it was, because it's you know, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but it was the last episode that just kind of, wow, this is really good. The writers of this story haven't lost the plot.
Can I ask something? You know,
and it's like 5 or 6 seasons in, right?
Yeah.
With Orange of the New Black, I think I got about to 2 seasons.
Same here.
I got about 2 seasons in. And here's what I noticed. And with a lot of these new shows where the head writers are women, I'm conscious that the writing is tapping into a female audience where the level of understanding is, it's pretty intimate and detailed.
Yeah.
And I feel as the male audience, I'm like, I think...
Well, you're taking notes, lah.
I'm taking notes, and I think I've got to ask my female friends about that particular reference.
Right.
Do you feel that as a female viewer, that they're getting deeper and more intimate with the experience?
Well, it's also very authentic.
Right,
it's a very authentic
and
experience.
Foreign to me as a male viewer.
I mean, the characters that they have, you know, there's this the only Asian character, and she's just hilarious. She just has 3 lines, and, you know, it's like, oh my God, there she is again, and then she's gone. But the Latino characters, I think, are really, really great. The black female character, they're strong, complex, complicated women, all put together in this very small, confined space. And, of course, hell breaks loose, but it's also about power. it's also about, you know, dealing with the system that, that sort of controls how they live. And that's what this episode, this season is really about. Those conflicts that exist between the inmates and the system outside.
All right. Orange is the New Black. The latest season is streaming on Netflix. But of course, if you haven't seen any of it, you can binge like, because all the seasons are streaming on Netflix. Ezra, you're next. What is your recommendation?
So my recommendation is twofold, but the theme is brown people in America telling their stories. So Master of None, season two, is a series by Aziz Ansari. Mm-hmm. He's a comedian, mm-hmm. and he talks about his life growing up in the United States as part of an immigrant family. And it's all very funny, all these different references, and their storytelling approaches are very, very unique as well, because we don't see that. We always sort of see a very cookie-cutter version of America, the Gilmore mm-hmm. Girls, mm-hmm. Full House,
Friends.
But when you see it from the lens of a brown person in America, it's very, very fascinating also for Malaysian viewers, because mm-hmm. it looks and smells and feels really familiar,
right.
Of being the outsider. And so Master of None season two, but also there's a stand-up special by Hasan Minhaj called Homecoming King, I think. And Hasan Minhaj is a Daily Show correspondent, and he essentially tells his version of story. He's an Indian Muslim guy living in Davis, California, and there's a lot to unpack there, and his entire stand-up special is really just one long story of his life. And
oh, and it's incredibly emotional as well. It's not just laugh out loud funny.
Okay. Right.
It'll make you like choke up a bit.
And so what was interesting about it is it feels like there's this new brand of performance art where it's right. a little bit poetry slam, mm-hmm. but it's also a little bit stand-up comedy with visuals to accompany it. It's very, very comprehensive and intense. And it's always interesting because I always feel like, you know, these personalities from the Indian American community, mm-hmm. they need to work a little extra harder to get their time in the spotlight. And these two products have turned out really, really well, in my opinion.
Master of None season two, I've seen the whole season twice now because it's so good.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's 12 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. But yes, it's a different brown person, right? So the African Americans and the Latinos have had the spotlight, and now it's almost the South Asian brown person who's coming to the fore in American TV and movies, which is really cool.
And of course, you know, the South Asian experience, you know, like we can relate to it as Malaysian viewers. Yeah. It's so similar of living in these private and public spheres that always compete with each other, and you're not quite sure how to react to your family member in front of your friends and your friends in front of your family. And they do this and squeeze the heck out of it so well that it really relates to Malaysian viewers.
Cool.
Right. Very nice. Master of None season two, also on Netflix. Wow, we're just giving Netflix some free ad time, lah.
Just saying, they should just give us some passes.
Keep putting out good content. Right. Yeah. I'm also going to recommend a TV show, but it's very different from you guys. It is not in any way deep or meaningful, but it sure is fun. It's called Timeless, and it's on regular broadcast television in the US. It's by NBC. It's a time travel show. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for time travel shows. I've loved them ever since like Quantum Leap.
Outlander's coming soon.
An Outlander, which is amazing. But Timeless, what I like about Timeless is a very basic premise, a very typical premise. Someone's built a time machine without telling the government. Terrorists seize it. Oh. And the government and the whatever, CIA, whatever, have to get a professor, a military man, and a scientist to go back in time and keep going back and forth to stop this terrorist from changing history, right?
Wow. Sounds like a barrel of fun.
Yeah, so seems like a simple premise, like the Quantum Leap premise. But the one thing I love about the show is that things change. So they don't, you know how time travel, when they go back into the past, they're always like, well, you can't change major moments in history, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in this one, they change them. So the Hindenburg only burns and crashes the morning after, and someone else kills Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really cool because they take that risk and they see what implications it has and what ripples it'll have throughout time. So I was like, oh, well, that's fresh. I mean, you know, in Quantum Leap, there was a very great episode where he leaps into Lee Harvey Oswald. But at the end, he gets taken over by the mind of Lee Harvey Oswald and he has to kill JFK anyway, right?
Oh.
And so, you know, because they're always like, oh, you can't change the major bits. Mm-hmm. And this one, they just have no qualms about doing
so. Is it well written?
It's fun. It's typical broadcast.
The answer to that is no.
No, it's all right, but it's typical broadcast television. So it's not that Netflix formula. It's kind of safe. Yeah. But it's fun to watch. So if you're a fan of time travel fiction, Timeless. I mean, and the great thing is it was cancelled by NBC mm-hmm. and it didn't get a season two. But the fan outrage was so huge. A day later, NBC was like, okay, we hear you. We're bringing it back for a season
two.
What
a world we live in now where there's fan outrage. Would you want some fan outrage about your book when it comes out?
Absolutely.
Right? There needs to be some fan outrage.
No, of course. Like, I mean, we will all be there with candles. When Bernice is in Dangwangi. I'm just saying. All right, folks. You got our recommendations. Orange is the New Black, Master of None Season 2, Timeless. Check out all these TV shows. All that's left for me to do is to thank my honored guests. Bernice Jolly, thank you very much.
Thank you very
it's always
much.
A pleasure. Ezra Zaid.
Thank you very much. And also for those who nak balik kampung and they're driving, you know, tomorrow's riot, everything from all of us here at the station. Selamat Hari Raya.
Maaf Zai Batin.
Kosong-kosong and all that.
Yeah, kosong-kosong and all that. You can, of course, find us on our usual places. We're all on Twitter. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
Mulut Mata.
At Mulut Mata.
At Ezra Zaid.
And of course, there is the A Bit of Culture Facebook page. I just checked it and they were like, who the hell is this Umar guy? Bring back Cam Razlan. Don't worry, he'll be back soon enough. You've been listening to A Bit of Culture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station. Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.